USDA last week made some surprising changes to the acreage estimates for corn and soybeans. Let's find out what Pro Farmer thinks of those changes. We'll meet the new real estate chief at Farmers National, and let's go to London, Ohio, and check on the state of ag at the start of the Farm Science Review.
Live from the Farm Broadcast Research and Critical Science Laboratory via Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Brian Grady, the Brandstein, editor of Pro Farmer. Then it's Paul Shadegg and Randy Dickhoot from Farmers National, and later Dorothy Palanda from the Ohio Department of Agriculture. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip LaHurry.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank buddy. You so much, man. That's a busy schedule we got lined up, don't we?
It sure is. It really is.
Yeah.
But this is what we do. This is what we do.
Exactly.
I mean, what else would we be doing, you know, if not bringing cutting-edge information, news, analysis, insights to the world of agriculture? What else would we do?
I'm sure we could find something. Talk weather, sports. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that, but I kind of like doing what we're doing. So
I love to talk the sports ball. You know, there was the guy did the football kick really good that one time. Remember that?
Yeah, he like hit it over the fence, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I saw the same
clear
thing.
Off the ice. Clear
we
off
are
the
glad
ice.
That you are with us this morning. My name is Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson.
Sports. Yes.
And
yes.
We're going to go out to London, Ohio for the start of the Farm Science Review. Director of Ag, Dorothy Palanda, is going to be nice enough to join us at the end of the show. And it's a special Farm Science Review. 60th year, Davis. 60th year. It's crazy, crazy. We are going to be, when I say we, I mean me and Big Apple Joe Stackler are going to be in London on Thursday this week at
Good
the
work,
Meristem
boys.
Booth. And we will be broadcasting both the morning show and the afternoon show there from the Farm Science Review. Looking forward to seeing all the people over there. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news, man?
Well, let's take a quick gander at USDA's crop progress and condition update. This for the week ended September 18. Corn 87% dented, 40% mature. That's 5 percentage points behind the average pace of 45% mature. 7% harvested, 52% good to average compares to 53% last week. Are we concerned with a 5% lag in the maturity rating here, Chip?
Well, the reason that it concerns me is because it was planted a whole lot later than that, and the maturity on the crop has basically caught up to what we would normally see. Mm-hmm. 5 points behind is significant, but I'm not worried about any of the weather forecast doesn't have any indication that frost is coming even to North Dakota anytime soon. So, no, I'm not concerned about that.
Well, soybeans are 42% dropping leaves, 3% harvested, 55% good to excellent. Spring wheat right in line here, 94% harvested, 94% on average. Winter wheat, 21% planted, 2% emerged. Cotton, 59% bolls opening. That's ahead of the 51% average pace, 11% harvested, and 33% good to excellent compares with 33% good to excellent last week. Well, Chip, in other news, new U.S. home construction unexpectedly surged in August, rising to the highest level in 2 months, even as rising interest rates and steep prices for construction materials continue to cool the housing market. Chip, what do you make of this one?
Well, I want to talk to Randy about that as well and what the impact of higher interest rates are having on the real estate market out there. Yeah. But, it's slowing things down. I don't think there's any question about it. Now, I know some manufacturers that are working in building trusses and rafters and so on, and they're still awfully busy, okay? Yeah. So there's still demand for product.
Well, rents and other shelter costs are emerging as a major driver of overall consumer inflation, keeping it high at a time when some other sources are beginning to ease. Economists expect housing inflation to strengthen further before cooling off in the coming months, but are unsure of when relief will appear. A University of Missouri study commissioned by ag lender CoBank said the majority of principal farm operators work off the farm, with off-farm income accounting for 82% of farm household income. That was surprising to me, Chip.
Yeah, that's a big chunk of the net income, and maybe some benefits are included in that, but it's a big chunk of net income, no doubt.
Well, Ford says supply costs are running $1 billion above expectations in the current quarter. The company said supply problems have resulted in parts shortages that affect about 40 to 45,000 vehicles, particularly trucks and SUVs. These vehicles also typically carry a higher profit margin. Europe's biggest truck makers are stockpiling natural gas and preparing to shift to alternative fuels amid the threat of a winter shortage as Russia continues to cut off pipelines to the continent. Meanwhile, Germany released another 2.5 billion euros of credit line to secure gas supplies. Europe's scramble for oil and gas is causing a tanker shortage just ahead of expected winter demand increases. Man, it sounds like it could be a trucking shortage for fuels in Europe this winter.
Yeah, and they're trying to use those tanks for storage to build up their stocks. And I don't know if that's the right approach or not.
Well, last month brought severe drought, wildfires, and sweltering hot temperatures to many parts of the world, including North America and Europe, two areas that saw their hottest ever Augusts on record. This according to a new National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, report. Overall, NOAA said record warm temperatures encompassed 8.2% of the world's surface last month. And I think we can throw China into that basket of extraordinarily hot temperatures during August.
Right, right. And today is going to be a potential record high temperatures for parts of the Midwest.
Yeah.
I mean, we're heading for low 90s is what it sounds like. That for September 20th is kind of shocking, surprising.
I could feel it in the air when I went outside first thing this morning to take the dog out for his necessaries. Man, it's going to get hot today. Some days you can just tell, can't you?
You can just feel it. Absolutely. Now, this is the kind of day that will end the growing season for some of the soybean and corn crops out there. You know, those that are right on the edge of, geez, they've gotten dry, can't take much more stress. This is the kind of day that will be that stress that ends it.
Well, and finally here, let's end with some Russia news. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba urged Western nations to supply more weapons so forces can press ahead with their counteroffensive against Russia. The counteroffensive is, quote, a clear message to everyone that it works, that it makes sense to help Ukraine with weapons because we can defeat President Putin and his army in our territory, Kuleba said. He also predicted that Putin will probably try to block the renewal of a grain export deal that expires in November. Chip?
We had a conversation yesterday afternoon on AgriTalk with Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company.
That's right.
And got into that deal and maybe, you know, trying to figure out exactly what Putin has in mind there going forward. Okay, let's talk crops. Let's talk acres. We've got Brian Grady from Pro Farmer coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your cattle operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis Michelson, our newsman, is along for the conversation with Brian Grady, editor at Pro Farmer. Beej, welcome. How are you this morning?
Just great, Chip. Thanks.
Good, good, good. Okay, we haven't had a chance to really get into your thoughts, your impressions from last week's USDA crop production report. We've got to get that done, so let's jump right to it. USDA in the production reports last week, they took 1.2 million off of planted corn acres, took a million, or just under that, a million acres off of harvested corn acres. They took 570,000 off of planted bean acres and a bit more than that off the harvested bean acres. I think it was 580,000. Those surprised me, Beej. What was your take?
Yeah, it surprised me as well, especially on the soybean side of things. Now, after the FSA data dump in August, we had added 500,000 acres to soybeans just based on historical, on where they landed compared to the historicals. Now, USDA normally, NAS normally doesn't start incorporating those acreage numbers until October. So, the indication was, and they said this, that they had enough data that where they could start to incorporate a month earlier on corn and soybeans. And that probably should have been the first indication that maybe the acreage wasn't going to come up as much as what was anticipated. But still, to have them reduce the harvested soybean acres by 580,000 was just a shock to the marketplace.
Yeah.
And us included in that.
Yeah. And, it wasn't just Pro Farmer that was looking for a 500,000 acre increase on planted bean acres. That was a widespread expectation, as was the 1.3 million acre increase on cotton plantings based on the certified acreage data. I'm uncertain how the analysis got it right on cotton acres, but got it wrong on beans, and even got it wrong on corn, Brian, because we didn't want to do anything with the corn planted acres, and here they took a million off it, 1.2 million off it. I'm not sure how everyone's analysis got cotton right and corn and beans wrong.
Right. And, the corn bean combination, and we can talk about them together. I think that's probably the easiest way instead of just breaking them down individually. But that came in shy of what was expected by quite a chunk. And so that's kind of the head scratcher moving forward. And, they had enough data. NAS says they have enough data to make the changes in September. That would indicate that they just aren't going to make a whole lot of changes moving forward through January.
Right.
Now, there will be some changes, but quite honestly, based on what they told us and what we know, they probably just aren't going to be major changes at this point in time. So what we're left with is that corn and soybean acres were just, far less than what was anticipated. Not only all the way back to March, but in the June estimate and then as the certified acreage data came in.
Yeah, 176 million combined between corn and soybeans. Last year, it was 180.5 million. Is it prevent plant? Does that account for the difference?
Well, I think some of it will be. We don't know, and we won't know that final answer until January, unfortunately. But so a couple things could happen. One, they could increase the corn and soybean acreage a little bit moving forward as we move into October, November, and then January. And the other one is prevent plant acres, and like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And so I think a combination of those two things will happen. But, I guess if they cut in September on acreage – for both corn and soybeans, to add some back in October, November, or January would be kind of, somewhat unprecedented. I'd have to go back and look and really dig into that, whether that's happened or not before. I would suspect probably not, just because, like I said, they normally don't do this until October. So they went a month early and they felt comfortable enough to do that. I don't think that NAS wants to be seesawing back and forth on acreage.
Right. No way.
Yeah. They've tried to be as transparent as possible. And so I just don't believe that they want to seesaw back and forth. So I don't think that'll happen. Maybe we could see the prevent plant acres jump up. If not, the clear indication and the big reduction year over year was on corn. Soybeans were actually up a little bit year over year still, was that fertilizer prices had a bigger impact than we thought all the way through up until, this past report.
Yep. Okay. One thing that's gnawing at me through all of this is the August certified acreage data came a week later than it was supposed to. Now, was it a glitch in the technology, or had they looked at it initially and said, hey, something isn't right with this? Now, if it was, hey, something isn't right, and it carried through to the data release, maybe we're making acreage changes based on some flawed data. I don't know. We'll have to wait.
Yeah,
to see,
and like I think that there's a potential there. They did say that there were some issues. I think we all kind of assumed it was technical issues, but maybe it was that, you know, something's amiss here. Let's try to figure it out before we release this data. And then 10 days later, after it was supposed to be initially released on the 12th, it was released on the 22nd. And so there are some questions there.
No doubt.
Yeah. You know, it kind of, you know, begs a lot to question, I guess.
All right. How does this impact the pro farmer crop estimates?
Well, so we went with USDA's acreage because if they're bold enough to say that they have enough data, NASS as of September to make these changes, we just assume that they're really close to the finals at that point in time. Now, you know, if they add prevent plant acres, that doesn't go into the production equation.
Right.
You know, it's harvested acres times yield is your production. So that wouldn't have an impact whatsoever.
Right.
So we assume that the harvested acres are pretty close and just use those numbers. We did stick with our yield estimates that we put out the Friday following crop tour. And so we're still at 168.1 bushels on corn and 51.7 bushels on soybeans. So we still feel like those are achievable. Corn, we anticipate will come down. We'll have to see on the soybeans. You know, they're a unique creature anyway, but these late season rains and see how the crop finishes out. If they got enough benefit from those late season rains. But the one that really, you know, you look back and USDA took a big chunk out of harvested acres for soybeans. And they also reduce the yield, and typically you don't see both. So that's kind of, you know, one of those where
a lot of those acres, I'm not exactly sure how many, but some of those acres came out of Iowa and Illinois that were above the national average yield. So you took some high yielding acres out of the mix.
Yes, it was 600,000, I think, between Iowa and Illinois. So 400 out of Illinois and 200 out of Iowa, I believe. I don't have
that
data right in front of me right now, but
that'll hurt yield. That will
absolutely
hurt yield.
So that could be some of the reason that you see both acreage and yield come down. But that it's typically not the case.
Yep. Okay. So the pro farmer corn crop estimate is now at 13.59 billion bushels. Bean crop estimate of 4.479 billion bushels. Last week's newsletter, you had what I thought was a fascinating piece on price action repeating the 2010-14 pattern in corn and soybean markets. Man, we've only got about a minute and a half left, but tell me about that.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities in terms of the prices levels we started at when these rallies began, the timing of them with the years lining up, 2010 and 2020, and then carrying forward. You know, so halfway through this, we're lining up really well. You know, there are some things that we don't know what will happen, and Russia-Ukraine is the war is probably the biggest one there. La Nina, when it'll end and how much impact it'll have on the South American growing season in particular, the global recessionary issues and those types of things. So there are some unknowns, but definitely, you know, things are lining up through the first half of this 4-year cycle very much with what it did through the 2010 through 2014 period.
Yeah. And, you know, past performance is no indication of what's going to happen in the future, but what is the bottom line for the rest of 2022-23?
Well, I think that we'll stay at elevated price levels. The concern is if we move forward and we see a big production number coming out of South America, and then we see La Nina end and we have a better growing season here next year without all the weather uncertainties and stuff like that, then you see your production increase. and you see price levels come down. And that's what happened in that 2010 to 2014 period.
Right.
And we came off our highs quite a bit in that period.
Right, right. This is a fascinating piece of analysis, Brian. Well done on that. And hey, check it out. Just go to triprofarmer.com and make sure that you get last week's newsletter to see that analysis on the price action. Thanks, Beach. Hey, stick around. I'd kind of like to figure out what's going on in the markets here today. We'll do that in 1 minute, and then we'll talk real estate.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Brian Grady stayed on the line with us. Beej, nice move in corn and soybeans today. What's going on?
Well, wheat is the story of the morning. Just absolutely explosive price action. So everything that we lost yesterday, we've gained back and then some. And a lot of it's on the Russia annexation proposals or referendums for areas of Ukraine. So four of those areas have requested referendums within the next, by the end of the week and early next week. And so they're going to try to annex four of those areas. And bottom line, there is more grain uncertainties around the world because of that. And that got the wheat market going, which got the corn market going, which got the soybean market going. And so we're just seeing broad-based buying across the grain and soy markets here this morning,
including soybean meal and soybean oil, even with crude oil futures under $85 this morning. So that's an impressive move in the soy complex, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like you mentioned, the outside markets, crude oil's lower, the dollar's higher. And so we're doing this in the face of outside markets.
Damn.
So it's clearly, you know, buying headlines and that type of stuff on the global stuff.
Yeah. All right. Take us over to the livestock trade. We've got some strength in live cattle. Is the cash market helping us out?
We haven't seen any cash trade yet, but the expectations are that we will see firmer cash trade later on in the week. The feeder cattle, probably not too surprising that they're trading to the downside pretty significantly because of the strength in the corn market this morning. And then hog futures, they're lower, but they're off. They're working off their lows.
Yeah.
The October contract's leading us to the downside, but we're starting to see somewhat of a mixed tone in some of those far deferred contracts. So, maybe trying to work off the lows here.
Good stuff, Brian. Thanks for making time for us this morning. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Paging all landowner editors, can you please report to AgriTalk? All right, we're going to talk real estate. We're going to talk some changes, long-term changes that are happening in the industry. And joining in on the conversation is landowner editor Davis Michelson.
Hello, everyone.
And joining us right now, Randy Dickhoot, Senior VP of Real Estate Operations at Farmers National Company. Randy, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, glad that you're here, Randy. And we've got Paul Shattig, who is currently the Western Area Sales Manager, but soon to be Senior VP of Real Estate Operations at Farmers National. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad that you are. So for those of you that haven't heard, Randy is going to be retiring at the end of the month, and Paul has been or will be promoted to fill Randy's position. So, Randy, congratulations, man. Retirement, talk about short time, and you're 10 days away.
Yeah, it goes by pretty quickly when you get to this point, that's for sure.
Yeah, crazy. So more than 20 years with Farmers National, Randy, what's been some of the most striking changes in the real estate market since you joined the company there? I think you were in West Central Illinois to begin with, right?
Yes. Yes, I was. During that time frame, the price of land has sure escalated. And we had that, you know, first run up in the 2010 to 14 time frame, and then this current one. And so totally different than when I was back farming in the late 70s, 80s, into the 90s, when we had the farm crisis and pretty slow movement on land prices. Yeah. So it's really an exciting time, and we've seen technology come into it. You know, just over the last few years, we've transitioned, and Paul's led a lot of that, to these simulcast auctions, you know, where they're online and in person, and all the combinations thereof allows anybody to bid on a farm from anywhere.
Yep. Yeah, I wanted to mention that for sure. And the way that farms are parceled up now, it was happening when you were back there in West Central Illinois, but boy, it's common practice now to take that 320 acres and sell it off in three or four different chunks now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, people have to realize that we are real estate licensees and brokers for that seller. And our obligation is to the seller to get the best price possible. And, you know, a lot of times it makes sense that 80 acre tract will have more bidders and bring a better price than the whole 320, unless you have a big buyer or someone that wants the whole tract and they'll bid up. So those auctions give an opportunity to, you know, whatever works the best.
Yeah. Randy, how have you seen the buyers change over these 20 years?
We've seen, of course, farmers have always been, you know, the predominant pool of buyers in most cases, because farms only come up for sale once every three or four generations a lot of times. And so they want that one next to them and will pay up for it. But what we have seen, the investment funds, you know, they only own a certain percentage of the good farmland around the country, but they capture a lot of attention, and that continues to grow. You know, the pension funds, the investment funds that want to own some agricultural real estate as an investment strategy, a risk management strategy, and for long-term investment. So we definitely didn't have so many investment funds in that market 20 years ago.
Right. Right. Yeah. Paul, jump in here. And how have you seen the buyers change just in the last 3 or 4 years during this price increase?
Yeah. And I'll definitely echo what Randy has said, you know, with our operating landowners continue to be the biggest driver at those auctions and in those sales. And of course the investment funds are something a little bit different. And what I'll add to that is that we have a lot of these, what we'll call individual investors, that they are not farm operators, but they're individuals that see the value in owning land, and those local or smaller investors have come into the market and really help set the floor. Even though they may not be the successful bidder, they definitely get in there and participate. And we're seeing a lot of those guys buy farms. And the nice thing about that for farm operators is that they're always looking for someone to lease that farm to.
Paul, I've got a question here on those non-farmer investors. There's been an awful lot of talk about that, an expectation that demand from those folks will keep a floor under land prices, at least in the near term. Are you changing the way that maybe you market your sales so that they're more visible somehow to those non-farm investors?
Hmm. Yeah, I think we're very purposeful through our marketing. Mm-hmm. When we list a property for sale, there's a lot of new marketing avenues, whether that's digital marketing, social media marketing, that help reach those types of buyers. So definitely trying to use a more rifle approach, targeted approach towards making sure that those individuals know that there's a farm for sale, And it may not have to be in the same state they live, but they're
right.
They're looking for that good value.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the individual investor. Like you said, Paul, they may not ultimately win in a bidding war, but they're there at the end is what I've observed from some of the reports. And if they're there at the end, they're having an impact on the market.
Yeah, without a doubt. We've definitely seen that. And definitely, and not just here recently. I would say it's been the last 5 years that we've seen them coming to the market. But yeah, they're definitely active right now because they look at money they may have invested in the stock market that they feel like maybe better invested in land.
Exactly. Okay. Randy, so we've had a decade long, or maybe even a little bit longer than that, period of low interest rates. It seems to be coming to an end. Is that changing the market?
Well, at this point, it hasn't affected the agricultural land market too much. You know, it's different than the residential housing market where there's definitely the increased mortgage interest rates have put some downward movement on home prices. But what we're watching is, you know, if interest rates go higher, and if they go there pretty quickly, it's definitely going to have some more impact on land values because of those who do need to mortgage it will become more cautious. Also with higher interest rates, you know, investor will start to look for a higher return on investment or ROI. And so that means you either get better income or rents or you lower the price you pay for it. So we haven't seen it yet so much because there's still strong demand. We've got strong sale prices in most cases, unless it's a lower quality land.
Okay. All right, Paul, what trends are you watching that might give us a clue to how the real estate market is going to perform going forward?
So just kind of to tail off of the interest rate discussion, as Randy indicated, if those interest rates move up too quickly, my concern is that we're going to lose a segment of our buyers. And competition is key in the land market, and that's what's driving – competition is what's driving those values up. So if we lose a segment of buyers, that's definitely going to affect values as we move forward. And then, you know, commodities, as long as those commodity markets stay strong, I think that's going to help keep interest in the land market. And then also looking at some of these world events and how that's going to impact the supply, demand, supply chain, things like that. We're really watching those closely.
Gotcha. All right. So, Randy, what do you got planned for post-retirement life?
Well, still figuring that one out, but more time with grandchildren and being able to be a little more flexible will be probably on the top of the docket.
I love that. Hopefully it involves a fishing pole in your hand and spending some relaxing time. You've earned it, man. You've been an important piece of the ag community for a long time in that role there at Farmers National. And we're going to miss you here at AgriTalk. Nothing against you, Paul. We're just getting to know you, but we're going to miss you at AgriTalk, Randy.
Well, I appreciate that. Those you're too kind, and I'm just trying to do my job. And it's been a good place to be here at Farmers National. It's employee-owned and the great people we work with. And, you know, whether you're in agriculture as a farmer, a landowner, supplier, the ag media, it's all special. It's all different than a lot of the other commercial media and stuff. So it's always been great working with the agricultural media. And we just do things differently. And I've appreciated visiting with you every once in a while, too.
You bet, Randy. We have certainly appreciated your time. And Paul, you know, keep our number handy. We'll be making contact to get you back on again soon, okay?
Yep, that sounds good. You know, the Randy's kind of set the standard for keeping us out in the media, and I hope to continue that.
Excellent. Good work. Good work. Congratulations again, Randy. That's Randy Dickhout, Senior VP, Real Estate Operations, retiring at the end of the month.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
AgriTalk is brought to you by FBN, where for a limited time, new customers can save an extra 5% on AgSaver glyphosate. Visit fbn.com/direct. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us for this morning's AgriTalk. Today opens the 60th Annual Farm Science Review, London, Ohio, and at the site this morning is Dorothy Palanda. She is the director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Dr. Palanda, thank you so... Dr. Director Palanda, thank you so much for making time for us this morning.
It's my pleasure and honor to be with you. What a beautiful day we have here at the first of a three-day show here in London, Ohio.
Yeah. It looks like you're going to have a great run of weather for the show. I hope it sticks around. I'm going to be there on Thursday. Looking forward to being there. The 60th yes. Farm Science Review. Yeah. Man, what does the Farm Science Review mean to Ohio farmers?
You know, you look at the thousands of people that are walking up and down the streets here at this show. And what it means is what I hear in the conversation of people, father and son pointing to the latest in technology and saying, look at that, Dad. Let's go see the drones. Let's go see the drones in action. On today, OSU announced a new Skylab project that's going to be introduced in the next few years, growing plants in outer space. Can you believe it? And the tone and the people and the expressions that they have on their faces as they walk up and down and go into the various buildings and tents, seeing a sustainable agriculture, the latest in machinery, and just the best part of all of this are the conversations and the relationships that are created and sustained at this wonderful event.
Well, it turns into a bit of a reunion for those that come back year after year, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And of course, we can't forget to talk about the food, the smells we've got steaks that are grilling, you've got kettle corn, you've got lemon shakeups, and people are strolling down the streets here, food in hand, and taking the time to stop and look at the latest in technology and machinery and products.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So ag research is a big part of the effort in the Ag College at Ohio State. When you hear research in agriculture, what are your thoughts there?
Well, of course, at the Department of Agriculture in Reynoldsburg, Ohio, our research labs are the heartbeat of our own campus. We are there every day diagnosing plant and animal diseases. And of course, we want to be very proactive about it so that we can help our producers anticipate and prevent the various things that decimate their crops and make their animals ill. We are so proud to be partners with OSU in that research.
Yeah. Funding for research. When I take a look at how funding for ag research is in the United States compared to other areas of the world, I'm a little disappointed that we don't spend more on research. Is it adequate?
Oh, I would say that this year we've seen a great deal of interest in it from the Washington on down. Yeah. We participated in a grant opportunity called Climate Smart. Billions of dollars are being invested from Washington on down to talk about sustainable agriculture, to talk about innovation, and mostly to be climate smart as we move forward with our agricultural industry.
Yeah. Boy, you talk about an effort underway. The investment in the as you said, climate smart agriculture. What's the level of acceptance and the attitude toward sustainable ag there in the state of Ohio?
I always have said that our producers are the number one conservationists in Ohio. You know, we talk about H2 Ohio as really the number one research project going on right now in the state of Ohio with regard to the agricultural community's participation in reducing phosphorus loading into the Maumee Basin and Lake Erie. And, you know, Governor DeWine is famous for saying, you know, I always look to the research first in terms of making my next decision point about moving forward. And as we move forward into our third year of H2 Ohio, you know, we have learned a lot of things and we're tailoring the program as we move forward based upon the best science and research available in partnership with Ohio State, Stone Laboratories, Bowling Green, Heidelberg and others who are all working together towards the same goal, and that's sustainable agriculture with a climate smart approach.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Water quality research was a thing in Ohio before other states even knew that it was a problem. So it's,
that's correct.
Yeah. Long history, long history.
Other states are looking to Ohio to see what they're doing. And I've been asked to speak across the country to other states who are saying, how did you get the producers to be involved in this program? How did you incentivize them? And my response always is the producers were here for us from the very start. They exceeded our expectations in enrollment in the program and their continued participation. Here we are going into year four of the program and their continued dedication. You know, farmers want clean water for their children, their grandchildren, and for generations to come. They are the ones who are leading the charge in terms of these climate smart and innovative techniques.
All right. All right. What do you want listeners to know about agriculture in Ohio?
That agriculture remains and will continue to be Ohio's number one industry, employing 1 in 7 people in Ohio in some form. And the reason that it continues to be number one is that farmers feed the world. Ohio farmers feed the world, and we are continually asked and challenged to produce more on less land. And an event like Farm Science Review is something where our producers can come, gather. Most important thing that happens here are the conversations.
Yeah.
Where they share information and ideas to each other. And this, it's events like these that really highlight the importance of agriculture in Ohio.
Oh, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to having some of those conversations as well. I might also be looking forward to having one of those steaks off the grill when I get over there. Director Palanda,
they'll be waiting for you.
Director Palanda, thank you so much for making time. Have a great day in London. And we'll see you soon.
We'll see you here. Bye-bye.
All right. Sounds great. That is Director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Jeez. Dorothy Palanda. Thank you so much for listening this morning. We really appreciate it. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Sal Gilberte from Tucurium ETFs. Tomorrow morning, Davis will be here for a conversation with Josh Linville from StoneX Group.